The comes together at 7 minutes after three, and today is the 15th of February, and let the record reflect that Representative Bob Herron, Representative Alan Dick, Representative Charisse Millette, and myself, Representative Keller, are here. Representative Miller and Representative Cisna have been excused for today. They won't show up, so I would expect that we may get one more. But, today we're here. The question before us is the confirmation of Commissioner William J. Struer. And yeah, we have we passed around to the committee the opportunity to prepare questions, and we have forwarded some to him. It's totally up to the commissioner whether he addresses those in whatever presentation you want to make to us. And then I will give the committee an opportunity to ask questions when you're done, or wherever you want to do it. But if you would come up and introduce yourself for the record and tell us why you want this job. No, it's got to be one of the scariest ones in the state of Alaska from my perspective. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Struer, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services, and I say that slowly because I'm still getting used to it and still wondering at times if that's what I really want to call myself. But anyway, that said, I want to do this job. I've been working in healthcare. You all have my resume evidently in front of you, but I've been working in healthcare for an excess of 33 years, the majority of which, about 30 of those, has been in the private sector. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my resume, but it's been largely in strategy. Medicaid has been a large part of what I do, but on the private side, working with the indigent. I started domestic violence shelters years and years ago before they were even popular. Started the first free clinic in the state of Oregon, in Eugene, Oregon, many years ago for the sisters, part of our mission. And moved up to Alaska in 2003, having worked on and off in Alaska when I worked for the Sisters of St. Joseph in Ketchikan. Never really got my feet wet in real Alaska unless I could escape from Ketchikan once in a while and see what it was really like. And always vowed to come back and went back to Michigan, my roots, and started a health plan for some physician friends of mine who I'd been stayed in contact with from many, many years earlier when I dropped out of medical school to go to Vietnam to fly airplanes because I wanted something more fun to do. That was a lot of fun. But anyway, that is a little bit of my quick history. I've been with the state of Alaska as the Director of Healthcare Services, then as Deputy Commissioner for Medicaid and Healthcare Policy, and now as the named, at least at this point, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. If you would like, I can run through these questions, or you can pose them to me as you would, whichever format you prefer.
Myself, I would prefer to let you go ahead and take initiative and address them as you see fit. And if we see something then we'd like clarification on or whatever that we can ask. First, Representative Cisna is online listening in. So, Sharon, you're not muted. So, if you want to interject something, please speak up, and I will try to respond. Representative Herron?
Do members have copies of the questions?
I can get some.
As I go through these, I can repeat the questions, Mr. Chairman, if that's what you'd like.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The first question is, a lot of the focus over the years has been on the supply side of health care, cutting costs, reductions of reimbursements on our services, requiring prior authorizations, et cetera. What is being done on the demand side to keep our beneficiaries healthy? I think demand side looks at two areas, is keeping beneficiaries healthy and making sure that they have the proper care at the right time, the right place, delivered to them. You've heard me, that's part of my mantra. And prevention alone, to me, is not the only answer. But prevention is a big part of it. Division of Public Assistance provides services that help achieve its mission of protecting and promoting the health of the public. 6 core public health priorities are infectious disease and epidemic prevention and control, injury prevention control and emergency medical services, chronic disease prevention and control, access to early preventive services and quality health care, public health emergency preparedness and response, and protecting the human health from environmental hazards. All of those are more oriented on the demand side. Wellness and prevention programs is the second one, and it's what are we doing in those areas? Wellness and prevention programs have shown reductions in healthcare costs and other improvements of around $3 for every dollar spent. Have we looked into these, and what are we doing in this area? A big part of this, for me, is the $3 for every dollar spent. I think that the jury is largely out on this. We see it in bits and pockets of things, and we need to find out which of the prevention programs really work. One area of success is in adult smoking rates. Rates have declined 30% since 1996, 27% to 18.8%, resulting in 8,000 fewer tobacco-related deaths and $300 million in averted health care costs. Public health employees actively work with communities and organizations to build capacity and sustainability among health systems and assure access to quality health services, often acting as liaisons between federal, state, and private organizations in the areas of health planning and service delivery. In addition, the division engages in activities to ensure emergency medical service personnel are qualified and properly trained, medical and legal investigative work related to unanticipated sudden or violent deaths is also provided by public health. The Division of Public Health also works with a variety of organizations and individuals across the state to develop and implement health promotion strategies and community action plans for preventing and reducing the burden of chronic diseases. Promoting healthy behaviors by educating the public and supporting community actions to reduce health risks and injuries has proven effective. In an effort to eliminate health disparities, outreach activities are conducted to link high-risk and disadvantaged people of needed services. Our recent efforts around obesity and our continuing efforts around obesity and the extent of obesity in the state of Alaska demands that we do this are going to reap rewards. What I call self-inflicted health care issues, obesity, smoking, accidents in many instances. Somebody was telling me wild living, anyway, the whole variety of self-induced health issues cost us $600 million a year in the state of Alaska, just in health care alone, health care services alone. Another $1.9 billion in lost productivity. But we have an issue in Alaska. If you take those two numbers and add them together, that just is almost exactly the budget of the Department of Health and Social Services, and we need to do more. We need to figure out better ways to do this. And our efforts in this area need to become focused. What I struggle with is how do I balance the demands of care, the growing budget, the increasing number of enrollees with funding prevention activities. And so we need to slowly tip the scales more toward prevention activities and away from treatment activities and begin to show successes in the area. And that's probably the biggest struggle that healthcare has right now is how much is enough and how much is too much on the prevention side, and what do we need to do in that area. Professional staff monitor within public health and throughout the department. Professional staff monitor and assess health status through the collection and analysis of vital statistics, behavioral risk factors, disease, injury data, and forensic data from postmortem exams. This information, along with other scientific information and expertise, is used to improve the program services that we provide, develop healthy recommendations, and inform future public decisions. Next question is related to do we have data on prevalence of various preventable chronic diseases in our Medicaid population? Nice segue into from the last question, such as cardiac disease, type 2 diabetes, and obesity. If so, what diseases, conditions are they, and are we doing anything to address them? In state fiscal year 2010, Medicaid covered 120,879 individuals, Alaskans, with total payments of $1.172 billion for their health care. In the same year, recipients with chronic conditions represented 49.7% of active Medicaid recipients and 86.5% of all Medicaid payments. You heard the 15% consume 75%. The 50% consume 86% is very representative of what we're facing in Alaska because of the chronicity of the disease that we have.
Before you move on that one, do we have a breakdown on, I know there's dual diagnosis too, but you know, like diabetes as compared to the other ones, is that another question in here? I was wondering that when I read it, if we have the breakdown of the different kinds of chronic diseases, which one of them is the most expensive compared to the others and the biggest prevalence, and is there a breakdown like that available? I know you don't have it with you, but we've got that, right?
Mr. Chairman, I do have some of that with me.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much for that entree.
Did I jump the gun? I'm sorry.
Starting with diabetes, we have 5,217 individuals on Medicaid in the state of Alaska suffering from diabetes. Total payments for those individuals was $12,553,951 in state fiscal year 2010. Congestive heart failure, 1,318 individuals, $5,687,000 and change. Asthma, 6,669, $5,521,000 in expenses for those individuals. We have a case management contractor that works very closely with these individuals to make sure they get to their appointments, to make sure that they take their medications, to make sure that regular visits are made. For the diabetes population, our cost savings for those individuals through our case management efforts was $673,636, so roughly 5% for them. Circulatory conditions, in other words, congestive heart failure and related conditions, $591,300. So we saved about 10% through active management of these individuals. And respiratory conditions, it's tougher to get at those because asthmatics tend to not follow the rules quite as closely as they could in terms of their medication, in terms of inhalers, in terms of taking the right intervention or process at the right time, and we save $427,000 or about 7% on those individuals. So the savings are there. Can we do more? Yes, we are doing more. We went to an electronic process to better case manage our folks and with Qualys, our contractor, and we saved a considerable amount of money in the rebid of the contract and going to electronic processes with them. So we will be stepping up what we do in that area because we think it's a good way to address that. I think the implementation of medical home is also going to help that because having a physician, having a nurse practitioner, having a physician's assistant that they can go to, that they can receive service from without having to worry about going to an emergency room or some of the other challenges that our Medicaid recipients have is going to further alleviate and further reduce, I believe, treatment of these chronic conditions.
Just a little parenthetical question there, if I could. When you brought up medical home, it brings up the pilot that we have in the community health centers. How do you plan, and what are the plans for leveraging community health centers into the solution formula that we have?
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the instances of where I'm running as fast as I can. I am hopeful that we will be able to not only have a community health center pilot, but what I would like to do is have a private health facility such as a physician clinic that we contract with for a medical home, that we contract with community health centers that are capable to rising to the task of managing the individuals through medical home, but also work with our tribal partners to have a South Central Foundation, a YK, or a Manelik to be able to take on the populations in their area and begin move them toward a gentle form of managed care, if you will, in a form of medical home. Part of it's going to be gearing up for it, and part of it's going to be learning how to manage that, because except for physician practices, freestanding physician practices, and South Central Foundation, there is a steep learning curve to implement medical home, but I believe it works. What have you done to define medical necessity? You have no idea how much I wanted to skip over that question. The department has been working with the Department of Law to understand state case law and different approaches used by other states to address the question of medical necessity. We're trying to determine if there's a practical approach that will work in Alaska. The years I've spent in healthcare, working with physicians side by side, one of the first things I was taught is only a physician, only a medical professional can determine medical necessity. And that's what makes it so hard. You know, we can work with the Department of Law all day, but ultimately it comes down to the physician saying this is a danger to the individual, this is what they need to live, this is what they need to thrive, and it's coming to that definition that's made it so difficult. The issues are complex. The analysis is not yet complete. Once it is, we present our findings to the governor for his consideration. If statutory changes are required, we'll bring them to the legislature for your consideration as well. But it's going to be very, very tough. I don't have any promises at this point on it, because no matter what, the thicker we make a definition, in other words, the more detail we put into a definition, the more questions is going to rise. The thinner it is, in other words, the more gentle approach we take, there's going to be questions that are going to arise. And so we need to find somewhere in the middle that we can make it work. Other state definitions, other states who are in the same boat as we are with a Supreme Court decision or a higher court decision in their states are experiencing the same issues. Arizona is probably the furthest along, and they have the same issue and the same dilemma that we do. So it's going to be a tough one to address.
A follow-up on that, Representative Millett.
Thank you. What's the timeline on the Attorney General's office coming back with some, or Department of Law coming back with recommendations? And I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, there's a bill raising the federal poverty level of 200% for dialysis kid care, and this is going to be, you know, another conversation about medically necessary in that, and the language in that. And so are we looking, anticipating something coming prior to the end of session? Are we looking this summer?
Representative Millett, through the chair, I want to get it as soon as I possibly can. If we don't have something by March 15, I'll be surprised with that to put something out. Either that or a solution to deal with the expansion of Denali Kid Care, if that's where you're going at it. So.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
The next question is, could you also share your thoughts of how the department will ensure equitable services to the people most difficult to reach? I'm referring to those in the bush and who may need most help. This is probably one of the areas that I think that the state of Alaska stands above all other states in the United States. The range of services that we provide, the ability to develop physician extenders in the forms of community health aides, dental health aides, behavioral health aides, and the like, to provide services and ensure the services are available is second to none. The efforts of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in the development of telehealth and telemedicine to reach out to those clinics so that the community health aide in the clinic can work with a pregnant female, work with someone needing dental services, and be able to connect electronically with a qualified professional to expand the reach and capabilities is amazing, and I think is one of the areas that we need to continue to develop. In behavioral health, we're working on a project designed to support behavioral health service delivery in tribal rural agencies through improving understanding and delivery of Medicaid services. The project was developed under the Bring the Kids Home program to improve access to community services for children. However, the project was designed to allow for a broad application to all behavioral health community services. Project includes work with two contractors, one for gap analysis, who provides on-site comprehensive assessment of agency program management and Medicaid billing, office procedures, and service delivery. When I worked for the sisters, one of the things they always said, to do good, we have to do well. And don't ever forget that, Bill. I remember being told that by one little five-foot nun. And it's indelibly inscribed in my mind. And we need to do that as state delivering services, too. We need to work with our tribal partners to make sure that, you know, they have the infrastructure and they have the ability to provide the services and to reach out to their communities. An amendment to the MMIS contract, the Medicaid Management Information Contract, to develop and implement on-demand computer-based training modules, including videos, workbooks, and companion guides on behavioral health services to begin to expand the capabilities in those communities. I don't believe, at least not as long as I'm going to be in Alaska, we're going to see a social worker in every village, or that we're going to see a high level of therapy being able to be delivered in every village. But I think access to those services needs to be developed and will continue to be developed through working smarter. You know, we have telemedicine capabilities. We have telebehavioral health capabilities. We have video screens. Everybody knows how to work a video machine. And, you know, figuring out a way to do that and do that effectively is one of the ways that we're going to reach. The behavioral health aides, the department's been working with tribal directors to add coverage of behavioral health aides. We're presently covering level 3 and level 4 behavioral health aides. I think there's an opportunity somewhere down the line once we iron out the bugs of this one and CMS is comfortable with it, because we are one of the first states in the nation to cover behavioral health aides under our Medicaid program and other physician extenders, and be able to expand that and continue to expand that, because those are the folks that we need on the ground working in the villages and the smaller communities. RPTC and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder allow children who qualify as needing services in RPTC and prenatally exposed to alcohol to be served in community settings through the provision of comprehensive mental health and community support services, once again tied to the behavioral health aides in the communities. What's the benefit of having therapeutic courts compared to regular courts in regards to recidivism rate? In February 2007, the Alaska Judicial System, Alaska Judicial Council conducted a recidivism study of the felony therapeutic courts in Alaska and compared them to non-therapeutic court participants with similar characteristics. The council found graduates of therapeutic courts were rearrested and reconvicted far less frequently than comparison offenders. Only 13% of the graduates were rearrested in the first year, a rate of one-third of that for the other comparison group. And only 6% of the graduates were convicted of a new offense in the first year, a rate of about one-quarter of that of the other. The other was 22%. When compared to the baseline recidivism rates of offenders charged and convicted with felonies in 1999, the recidivism rates of the therapeutic court graduates had significant severe convictions in the first year. The average cost of incarceration per offender is between $20,000 to $50,000 annually, and I think that's a very, very low number compared to what we're experiencing. But well, the average cost of services to a therapeutic court candidate is between $2,500 and $4,000 annually. So it's almost a 10-to-1 saving.
Thanks, Commissioner.
On the
recidivism rates, do you just track them for 1 year, or is there a continued tracking from 1 to 5, and then 5 to 7, and 7 to 10? The incarceration rates for the court system are for Alaska. Don't we track recidivism rates at markers, and do we just track therapeutic courts for 1 year, or is there a continuation of the data that can it goes out over a longer period of time.
Representative Miller, through the chair, I believe that we do track for multiple years or sequential years, but the data that I have right now is from year to year. So I can get you those other numbers if you would like.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Okay. A recent evaluation of 9 drug courts found that rearrest rates over a 4-year period were 29% for drug court participants and only 17% for all drug court graduates, as compared to 41% for similar drug offenders who did not participate in the drug court. So I do have that much information. A 3-year county evaluation of DUI courts in Michigan found that DUI court participants were substantially less likely and comparable DUI offenders sentenced to probation to be arrested for a new DUI offense or any criminal offense within 2 years of entering the program. The effects on recidivism, this is the one that I do have, though. The effects on recidivism can be long-term. A recent long-term evaluation of Portland, Oregon drug court found that the crime was reduced by 30% over 5 years, and the effects on crime were still detectable in astounding 14 years from the date of arrest. So that there is long-term effect of it. That's about as long as I have right now. I can try to get it for the state of Alaska, of course. The last question that I have, Mr. Chairman, is members of the committee, is that on suicide prevention. With over $4 million spent on suicide prevention, our numbers are still the worst in the nation. Can you tell us of your plans for turning this around that's different from what's been tried in the past? Since the Suicide Prevention Summit in January of 2010, the Suicide Prevention Council has prioritized strengthening the communication and partnerships between stakeholders and between state and tribally funded suicide prevention systems. A partnership between the Alaska Mental Health Board, Suicide Prevention Council, Department of Health and Social Services, and Alaska Mental Health Trust to design and launch an interactive web portal, stopsuicidesalaska.org, to help connect individuals and community groups engaged in suicide prevention. This specifically addresses the need for more ongoing communication and interaction among stakeholders, one of the gaps identified at the 2010 summit. Thanks to an appropriation from the legislature for FY 2011, the council and the DHSS have been able to partner with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and others to develop a comprehensive postvention toolkit and training materials for communities to ensure that communities can respond quickly and effectively when a suicide occurs. These materials will be ready for dissemination by summer of 2011. The partners in this effort will also help to guide continued prevention efforts at the state level. In addition to strengthening partnerships with the tribal suicide prevention system and community stakeholders, the council has worked to expand access to suicide prevention and intervention training. In addition to providing very limited financial support for training on a few occasions, the council staff have worked with the Mental Health Board and the Drug Board and the Trust Training Cooperative to make for mental health first aid training and internationally recognized prevention and intervention model available statewide via delivery systems. One of the things that's been lacking is continuous involvement. Suicide is not episodic. Suicide is epidemic level in the state. And continuous engagement with community mental health, with community members, individuals, coalitions, agencies, and governmental entities has been supported and maintained by the council and the board since January 2010. In addition to keeping summit participants engaged for 6 months afterward to ensure that burgeoning relationships between participants were able to grow, the Mental Health and Drug Abuse Boards presented at the Alaska Rural Health Conference in 2010 on the importance of engaging non-traditional partners in suicide prevention, while at the same time bringing more stakeholders into the conversation. Social media has proven to be a very effective tool in this area. Co-location of the council with the Mental Health and Drug Abuse Board showed a renewed commitment on the part of DHSS to prioritize suicide prevention. The council now has a full-time program assistant and the benefits of ongoing collaboration with these boards and their staff. The council has also benefited from the passion and dedication of the members of the DHSS Public Information Team. The dynamic public information education efforts have supported and inspired additional prevention efforts by council members. The current suicide prevention campaign with last year's Iron Dog Champions is an excellent example of this synergy. I was going to bring the poster with me, and I didn't bring it, but it's a wonderful effort. It's a very subtle message. We printed posters with the two young members of the two young Ty Huffington, Huntington, and Chris. Anyway, I lost her two names. The poster. They had a poster signing this weekend that folks turned out. We also did baseball cards. And on the back of the baseball cards, the picture of the individuals on the front, on the back of the baseball cards is little statistics on them, but the suicide prevention hotline call-in number. And it's getting to be a collector's item, and I'll make sure that that is available for you all to see, because it's a great and positive effort, and right there is the author of the whole thing. There's the poster. And tremendous, tremendous response to this. And I think that what we need to do is begin to break the mold and do more stuff like this, because you need to get their attention, and we're not going to get their attention. Some of you sitting here remember Reefer Madness. Few of us don't, but some of us do, and the old scare campaigns around marijuana and things when we were growing up. It didn't work. This works because there's role models, and it's kids that they relate to, and it's people that they relate to, and it's a tremendous effort, and we need to do more of this. So with that, that covers the questions today. So.
Okay. Before we go to the committee, I just want to say for the record that the role of the committee is to decide whether or not your name is going to go forward to the whole body for confirmation or not. So it's very unlikely that you'll fail this test because none of us, I don't think, would vote to keep the full body from consideration. And so the intent, you know, is just to build some dialogue. You work a lot, obviously, with this committee, and to put some things on the record that we can refer back to and others can refer back to. So in that context, is there any questions or comments that the committee would like to make? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologize for being a little late. When you're talking about ranges of service and service extenders, one of the things that I was amazed with last year, we had a presentation at one of the health caucuses, maybe it was 2 years ago now, where there was one of the federal health, I forget what it is, the U.S. Department of Health, and it was a dentist that oversaw much of rural Alaska, and he was presenting and said that I think the number was like 85%, but anyway, it was over 50% of the children in a number of rural villages had to, by the time they were five, had been flown to Anchorage and had full mouth reconstructions because of the teeth problem. What is the department targeting something that is so significant for under five-year-olds that we're going to have the majority of the five-year-olds undergoing general surgery, general anesthesia, and full mouth reconstructions? And how are we targeting that specific issue in those villages?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. It's a great question, and it's been one of my efforts. One of the frustrations that we've had is an inadequate rate of early periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment. Early periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment, frequently called EPSTAT, is a program aimed at kids. It's aimed at getting at them early, beginning to address their conditions, situations, and things. There's been a lack of emphasis isn't the right word, but a lack of availability of dental professionals to be able to ensure that we are providing them the dental care that they need. And We're working on that. We're increasing our EPSDT, our public health nursing, is becoming more aggressive about it. The dental health aides in the communities, dental health techs and dental health aides in the communities, particularly in rural Alaska, are going to play a big role in bringing this forward. And I think continuing to expand that service is going to continue to improve things. But there's another thing we have to get rid of. When I go into a village and I go into a village store, I seldom see diet sodas in there. I see only sugared sodas. Representative Dick has, you know, been out in that area very recently, and that's what you see, and we need to begin to change that trend. I think working with the Department of Education and ensuring that the meals received in the schools are better meals. I think a good breakfast, making sure we got a good breakfast to all these kids, has to be addressed. So it's not a single effort that occurs and is going to occur, but our dental care is probably the least access that we have for any care in the state, and we need to continue to improve it, and continuing to improve it through the working with our tribal partners on this is probably the only real solution that we have, particularly for rural Alaska.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Siston, wait just a little bit, and there's a response here from Representative Seaton, and then we'll get to you. Yeah, but thanks. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
By the way, for the record, Representative Seaton has joined us about a half hour ago, and I forgot to. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess, you know, I am very supportive of the dental health aides and the expanded treatment that they've been able to do. I mean, from what I've read, I don't have the direct familiarity. But I guess what I want to do is make sure that we are addressing the early and preventative problem instead of treating and filling cavities or pulling teeth and doing all the things. I fully agree that in remote communities it makes a lot of sense to be able to do those procedures, but it seems that the preventative side of that, again, and you know, I've talked about a preventative model here of many in many different facets, but it seems like I was wondering if you could maybe report back to us or send us specifically on the dental problems, because it seems like these dental problems lead into so many of the other problems of health, and when you have health deteriorating, you have issues that, you know, lead to the depression, lead to all these other things. So, Mr. Chairman, I would sure like to see if we could either just get a response, or possibly we could have a hearing specifically on youth dental education problems. I mean, I just couldn't believe it when we were talking about full mouth reconstructions for the majority of the children in many of these places. And I think it's an issue that we need to really address head on and directly and not circumspectly.
Before I commit myself on that, and that sounds real good, I would like to know if you have a response.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think that I can get you a report on that that will probably address many of your concerns, if not all your concerns, and I'd be happy to distribute it through the committee and make sure that you have it, and then, you know, we can go with next steps after that, if that's okay.
And that makes my answer a lot easier. When we get the report, we'll dedicate some committee time to it. So, Representative Herron, I know Representative Siss is waiting. Okay.
I'll yield to her.
Okay, because Representative Herron was in the quay here, Representative Siss, but he said go right ahead. Thank you for joining us. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Representative Herron. I hope I live up to this. Anyway, and Commissioner Stewart, I really appreciate your approach and obvious kind of very nicely put passion, what you're looking to do. But the thing, and I think you've picked up on this, that really hits me is how much a state government really does play a part in the many different health issues that we have. And it seems to me that we've got 200 and some, it's almost 300 communities across the state as I've figured it out. And there's some of them that are dangerously close to disappearing as communities. And there's some that are very, very proactive in what they do on health. I'm wondering if there is any way to actually have a list of kind of rankings of well-being conditions that would give us an idea of where we have the most trouble and how communities are doing and who's rising up and who's falling back, and then even maybe create community mentorships, ways to actually work on this together across the state.
Representative Sisson, through the chair, I couldn't agree with you more. As I was sitting here, I was trying to figure out a way that we could actually do a temperature check, if you will, on communities about the health status of those communities. And I think it would be an admirable undertaking. I think it would be a huge undertaking. And figuring out the infrastructure and the way to do that is where I'm challenged right now.
May I do a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
No, go ahead, Representative Sisson.
Is there some way, we've got technology now that's pretty awesome, to do a statewide group of hearings on this very subject and try to get people throughout the state working on it and actually have it be something that the people help build?
Representative Sisson, through the chair, I think that there is a way to do that. I think that I need to probably sit down with Dr. Hurlburt, and he and I noodle this just a little bit and take a look at what options we may have available to us right now with either through public health nursing or through electronic technology, working with our tribal partners.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Sisson. Representative Herron, go ahead, and then Representative Millett has a comment, and we'll see where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, what is your favorite breed of dog?
Representative Herron, through the chair, Newfoundland.
Okay, so if that Newfoundland is running, chasing after cars, and he catches the car, does he know what to do with it? You know where I'm going with this line of questioning. So I appreciate where, you know, the answers to these questions, and I think that you can drive that car. But getting more serious here is, do you have a plan to roll out to this committee? And this is a question that Representative Millett and the chairman have already heard up in the subcommittee hearings. Do you have a timeline and a schedule that you could share with us today on how you're going to roll out your strategies for Medicaid managed care or cost containment?
Representative Herron, through the chair, no. That's a short answer. A longer answer is that I have bits and pieces in place to roll out. One of the things, the Medicaid medical home, I hope to be able to roll that out by early summer with at least 1 to 3 pilots, depending on the willingness of participants. In terms of enhanced care management, that is already rolling. I'm speaking to both care management and case management. Care management being helping the folks get the right care in the right place, and case management steering them to the right care in the right place. But there's a whole lot to do, particularly with the Medicaid budget, particularly as I read the President Obama's early budget information that I have, and I don't see enhanced FMAP in there anymore, and some other challenges that we're going to be facing. Technology is a big part of my issue, and getting that technology in place is going to present problems until the spring of 2012. The bright light on it is I met with our vendor for the new Medicaid Management Information System over the telephone this week, and I think that we're going to be able to bring up the data warehouse early so that we can begin to generate the reports and begin to see the detail of exactly what care we're providing, because you've all heard me say this. You know, we spend $1.5 billion very well, and we don't know if it's the right care, the right time, right place, the right people. Pretty scary. But there is an effort unfolding. There is a plan unfolding. It's getting those in decision-making capabilities to buy in so that the tough decisions that need to be made are supported.
Mr. Chairman, just a
follow-up for Bill here.
Well, I appreciate that, but again, there's four members, Representative Dick as well, that are on the subcommittee, and obviously we'd like to be part of that decision-making process of Medicaid, because there's a huge hole that all of us are concerned about. So I'm not asking for a response, but I'm sure that all the members that are on the subcommittee and this full standing committee would like to be a part of that debate in deciding how we're going to fix this.
Representative Herron, I really agree. And I also want to say that there's a large sense to which we have a huge responsibility on this committee, on the subcommittee, and on the task force for the Medicaid or the Health Commission to keep up with this issue. And it's a big one. And it's demanding of us, but I mean, it's an ongoing. PPACA, for example, is obviously a lot of tension on where it stands now because of the declaration. It's unconstitutional, and there's debate within this building whether that means that what preempts what here, an unconstitutional law or the direction it's set or the laws that are in place. So it behooves all of us to save a little time for work after dinner every day for a long time to help the commissioner keep up on his stuff. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Millett.
Thanks. Commissioner Schroer, I just want to share with you some of the comments that have been coming through my office since you've taken over. And one of the most resounding comments that I hear is from seniors, which you usually only hear from when benefits are falling back or lagging or are not at all. And the comments that I've heard back from the seniors in my district is that you're very attentive to their needs, and as it's a growing population, I'm happy to hear that those comments, as you know, some of the seniors can be very vocal on their issues, which they should be, but it's nice to hear some feedback that you're guiding the department has really changed how seniors feel about the benefits that they receive from the state of Alaska. So I want to commend you on that, because you probably rarely get good news in your job as a commissioner. And secondly, with OCS, I also have been getting feedback from my constituents that OCS has been very attentive, and I think that has a lot to do with Ms. Swanton taking the lead, reluctantly as she is, but taking the lead. And I really appreciate the customer service aspect that you're bringing to the department, and I appreciate your attention to that. And it's rare that we compliment departments, and rare that you probably hear compliments for your department. So I just wanted you to know that, and I appreciate it, and my constituents appreciate it. So thank you.
I'm going to give the committee one more chance here for comments or questions. Otherwise, I'll ask Representative Dick to make a motion on what we do here. But did you have another comment? No? Nobody? Okay. Go ahead, Representative. Representative Sista, are you happy? You can't vote, I guess, today because it was a signed paper, but were you done?
I'm sending a zip vote. For the commissioner.
Okay. Thank you for participating, Representative Dick.
Okay. With pleasure. I move that the Health and Social Service Committee forward Bill Struer's name to joint session for consideration as a Commissioner of Health and Social Services.
There are no objections, so be it. And then that concludes today's business. We'll meet again on Thursday, 2 days from now, on the 17th, 3 o'clock, this room. And we'll be hearing from Dr. Heaney, I think, and Carol Baggerly on vitamin D prevention that Representative Seaton has put a lot of work in this. And so that's for Thursday. So we are adjourned at 4:00.